A hangover is no fun. The head pounds, the stomach churns, and regrets are many. But that's the hangover from drinking too much. We'll confine ourselves in this hour to talking about another kind of hangover, the kind in which we find life just does not meet the expectations we have for it. And that's what today's guest calls an expectation hangover. In fact, she registered the term. She owns it. And not surprisingly, wrote a book by that title, Expectation Hangover, Overcoming Disappointment in Work, Love, and Life. Christine Hassler, the author and our guest, was a Hollywood agent but wanted something more out of life. So she became a life coach, speaker, and retreat facilitator, and an author. Her previous books are 20-something, 20-everything, and The 20-something Manifesto. Christine Hassler, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Good. You're branching out, I see. This book is for more than just 20-somethings, I gather.
Oh, well, you know, the funny thing is, I stopped being a 20-something. I don't know what happened, but
I remember those days.
I got well into my 30s, I realized, wow, you know, this disappointment thing is not a 20-something thing at all, and my 30s brought me all kinds of different expectation hangovers, and I think that's, you know, really what I've seen in life is that most suffering comes from when our reality doesn't match our expectations. So I wanted to create a book and a treatment plan and really a guidebook for people so that instead of having to suffer in their disappointment, they could really leverage it.
In your perception, Christine, is part of that an age-based thing? We just sort of think that by the time 30 comes along that we're just going to think, oh, you know, everything's going to be rosy and good and we'll be settled down and have kids, et cetera.
Well, it's not age-based in terms of who suffers from it, but I think age is one of the expectations we put on ourselves, like, by this age I should have this, and by this age I should have this. And so that's one of the many ways I think that expectation hangovers creep into our life and really affect us. You know, and the reason we even create expectations is because as humans we don't like uncertainty. We like to control things. We like to know what happens. And so having these expectations are almost like our attempt to control things.
I'm a little surprised that nobody had trademarked the term expectation hangover before you.
I'm so glad.
That is so...
And it's actually been kind of amusing. I was just finished my book tour. This book came out, you know, within this month. And I said, you know, the great thing about being the queen of disappointment is I have few competitors in the marketplace. You know, no one wants to be the expert on disappointment because the truth is I have to have experienced a lot of it to have this much material. So I think my next book is going to be something like, you know, eat a lot of chocolate, make a big difference in the world, fall in love, you know, travel the world, something like that, so I can become the expert on something like that.
Which is about, yeah, turning the equation upside down. But, you know, you are about switching the question up. And one of the first things you give right out of the box in the book is change the question from why this is happening to something else. What is the something else?
Well, the something else, we don't always know what to ask, but the question to ask really is, what am I learning? Because when you ask, why is this happening, you just perpetuate being in a victim mentality, and you suffer more. But if you ask, what am I learning, that puts you into a seeker, into a student. Because the thing is, any expectation hangover is rich with transformational opportunities. The point is, we just don't want to do the work. We don't want to suffer. So we're looking for a way out of it, lickety-split.
So instead of just, you know, feeling like you've been beaten with sticks or something, then the approach is to grab the stick, essentially, and pull yourself up and into a place where you're going to get something out of the experience.
Exactly. And a lot of times we can't pull ourselves up right away. You know, one of the things that I'm really passionate about is normalizing the human experience. And there's one of my kind of pet peeves in the personal transformation industry is there's this expectation that you're just supposed to be happy and positive all the time. And the truth is, I don't know any human being that lives in happiness and positivity 100% of the time. Now, we can have the awareness that nothing's wrong with us and we are love and we are all one, and we can have that kind of awareness, but we learn as human beings through contrast. So a big part of managing and dealing and healing from an expectation hangover is allowing yourself to feel the feelings about it in a healthy way. You know, that's why the emotional section is the first part of the treatment plan of the book, because most people don't know how to navigate their feelings. They either suppress them completely by distracting themselves, numbing them, overeating, overdrinking, overworking out, getting involved in someone else's life, just denying and suppressing, or they over-identify with them and wallow in them and can't get out of them. And so one of the things you learn in the book is how to release your feelings rather than suppress or recycle them. And that's like a normal part of it. If you've just lost your job, or you just got broken up with, or you just got diagnosed with an illness, you're going to experience some sadness or some anger or some grief about that. And it's important that we let ourselves go through that part of the journey.
But that, you use the word wallow, and I think that's the one that often gets thrown back at people who do feel like they need a little time to process the stuff that makes them feel bad, is that they're getting accused of wallowing in things. And we live in a culture of buck up, put a smile on your face, turn that frown upside down. I mean, your phrase here.
Exactly. And I don't, I would never say to somebody, buck up, turn that frown upside down. Like, I think that's like kind of, because, okay, let me just back up a second. So think about when we're all kids. When we had big feelings or something happened or we got triggered, a lot of us were told, buck up, don't cry. Good boys don't cry. Good girls don't cry. Shake it off. You know, it's not that big of a deal, whatever. So we learned at a young age how to minimize and suppress our feelings. And we don't want to perpetuate that as adults. What we want to do is greet our feelings with compassion, meaning we go, you know, it's okay. It's okay. I'm going to let this out. It's okay. Not identify with it. How we identify with it is we have the feeling and then we make a story about it. Like, we have the sadness and we go into, poor me, this is awful, my life's never going to be better, like, I got the short end of the stick when it comes to life, whatever. Or we go into analyzing it. Why did this happen? I can't believe this. I want this to be over. So we're having the feeling, but at the same time, we're judging it and we're identifying it with it. And that's what creates the wallowing. How we get out of the wallowing is just to allow ourselves to express with compassion.
All right. Much more to talk about with Christine Hassler. Her book is Expectation Hangover, Overcoming Disappointment in Work, Love, and Life. And we'll begin to get the differences between goals and expectations when we return to the Jefferson Exchange. Feel free to join the conversation. We'll come back with Christine Hassler and your phone calls and emails in a minute 25. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Christine Hassler, former Hollywood agent turned former personal trainer, now a life coach, speaker, and retreat facilitator and author. Her latest book is Expectation Hangover. She's actually trademarked the term Expectation Hangover. Subtitled Overcoming Disappointment in Work, Love, and Life. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about separating the things that we expect from life from the things that life actually gives us and finding satisfaction in that. Our phone number here at the Exchange to join the discussion, 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760, or by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So I guess step one here in parting the Red Sea for us is to define the differences as you see them, Christine, between goals and expectations.
Exactly. So a goal is kind of a purpose, something that's kind of set in stone, something that we really are pursuing because it's in alignment with our values and what we want to experience and feel in the world. And expectation is an eager anticipation for something to happen. So there's more kind of riding emotionally on an expectation, and there's also kind of an advocation of responsibility. Like, we expect life to turn out a certain way. We expect someone else to act in a certain way. And a lot of times expectations are kind of elusive. We're not really clear about what it is. It's just like we hope something gives us the desired feeling or result. Goals are more specific. And what I tell people is that kind of the secret sauce of pursuing goals without setting yourself up with an expectation hangover, for an expectation hangover, is with high involvement and intention. Like, I'm really participating. I'm doing everything I can do. I'm giving it my all without sacrificing my financial or emotional or physical well-being or any of my relationships. But I'm not attaching my worthiness, my happiness, my sense of self, my okayness on the result. Because the hangover happens because we get so emotionally invested in these external results and we lose sight of the process. You know, we get so addicted to the result that we think we want, we forget about everything we're learning and how we're growing and everything we're achieving in the process. You know, I can think of people who are entrepreneurs and they launch a business and then it doesn't do what they wanted it to do. They may even say it failed. And they lose sight of everything they've learned about themselves, all the courage it took, how much discipline it took, and how they can apply all that learning to something else. They get so caught up in the expectation hangover of the outcome not working that they forget about everything they learned along the way.
Ah, so it's I didn't get to this step, but all the other things that that got us to that step are just sort of flung aside because that one particular thing wasn't hit. That one particular target wasn't achieved.
Exactly. And again, like, you know, life is really about, and, you know, this is kind of one of those, you know, oversaid personal growth phrases. It's really about the journey, not the destination. And I think that we forget about that. We're such a future-focused society, and I think that's why we have so much anxiety and have so much depression and have so much stress, because we are not really savoring the present moment and everything that's happening along the way. We're not enjoying the ride. We just want to get there, wherever there may be.
Christine Hassler's book, Expectation Hangover, includes some stories, including your own in here. It sounds like you moved smoothly into your dream career, but then things weren't quite matching up. You were getting an expectation hangover from being a Hollywood agent. What was happening?
Yeah, it was one of my many expectation hangovers. Well, in the book, you learn about what I call your compensatory strategy. And I've noticed in coaching people for over a decade now that everybody has what I call a compensatory strategy, which means at some point in our life, we've developed a mechanism to compensate for where we have felt left then. Nobody gets out of the human experience without having some kind of upset, some kind of hurt, and usually it happens when we're kids, where we form a belief that we're less than or unworthy or something's wrong with us in some way. So for me, it was being bullied and teased. I was didn't have friends. I had a really tough kind of elementary, middle school, high school experience, and I formed the belief that there was something wrong with me and that I wasn't likable and I was broken. So to compensate for that, my compensatory strategy became being an overachiever. You know, if no one's going to like me, if I'm not going to have any friends, then I better be super-duper successful. And I became addicted to achieving. And moving out to Hollywood, I think it's very common for insecure people to move out to Hollywood and try to prove themselves. And I achieved this great career, but because I never dealt with the underlying issues that were really perpetuating my sense of not feeling worthy, no matter what I achieved, it never was enough. And I just had to keep raising the bar and raising the bar and raising the bar. Meanwhile, I never stopped to check in, like, do I even like this career path? Do I even like being an agent? And the truth is, no, I really don't like sales, and that's what being an agent is about. And I didn't like myself either in that situation. And I think, you know, for everyone listening, it's important to really check in and go, all right, like, so many of us get fixated on changing the external circumstances, the job, the relationship, whatever it may be, but really where the issue lies is in our relationship with ourselves. You know, there's something internally we're not happy with, and outer experience is a reflection of inner reality. So I'm passionate about helping people do the inner work so that the outer reality they start to create is more in alignment with who they are. And so for me, I thought that just by changing my external circumstances, by leaving my career, that would be the answer. And I ended up resigning and was on like a 2-year period of 11 different jobs and just searching and seeking and not finding anything that would make me feel the way I was looking for. And in addition to that, then I got diagnosed with an undiagnosable autoimmune disorder, went into thousands of dollars worth of debt, had trouble with my family, and got dumped by my fiancé 6 months before my wedding. And this was all within a period of the year. So I lost job, money, family, health, love, and that was my rock-bottom expectation hangover moment. And it was in
that
moment.
You laugh about it now, though.
Pardon me?
You laugh about it now.
I do, because I'm so grateful for it, because that moment is what put me on this career path. Because it was in making a promise to myself and whatever higher power I believed in at the time that if I figured my way out of it without changing my external circumstances, but by really, really healing whatever was perpetuating this, that I'd dedicate my life to helping other people. And so that started my journey of really doing the internal investigation, really understanding why I was doing what I was doing and what these expectation hangovers were about. And from there, my work as an author and coach and speaker was born. So I'm so grateful for it, because truly it put me on a path that absolutely feels like a purpose to me.
There was a moment of calm you reference in the book, a time when you just you felt spiritual or close to God or something. But
yes.
What happened?
I don't know. I think with a lot of these kind of God moments or spiritual moments, we don't really know in our, like, our human minds can't comprehend it. But the best I can describe it is I went from feeling so depressed and like I didn't even want to be here anymore to this wave of unconditional love, compassion, presence, everything I was looking for on the outside, I felt. And it only lasted for a moment because my mind came in and tried to figure out what was happening. But it was enough of a taste to go, oh my gosh, everything I was looking for out there in the guy, in the money, in the job, whatever it was, is inside of me. How do I access more of that? So it became a reference point that has been my compass ever since then.
All right, so let's talk about the meat of the expectation hangover. What are some of the very features of the stuff that we are setting up and therefore that we're essentially setting up to cause us disappointment?
Well, maybe I should define what an expectation hangover is. I'm sure people have figured it out by now, but maybe helpful just to start there. So it's when one of three things happen. Either the desired result or outcome, goal, whatever it may be, is not met, right, and you're disappointed. Or you achieve the goal, like I did with my career, but you don't have the feelings, the circumstances that you thought it would produce. You know, so you checked something off the checklist, but it's not really yielding the results you thought it was going to. Or life just throws you an unexpected curveball. You get fired, you get dumped, you get diagnosed with something, whatever it may be. And so the symptoms are similar to a regular hangover in that our head is aching, maybe not physically, but from all the thinking and figuring it out because we don't like uncertainty and we really want to know how to change it. There may be a sense of regret. We lack motivation. We're spinning in confusion. And most of all, we just want it to be over. So these expectation hangovers, they can be interpersonal. You know, it can be someone lets us down or betrays us or whatever. It can be situational. All of a sudden we're laid off. Or it can be personal, you know, just reaching a certain point in your life and feeling like I'm not living into my own potential. I'm not living into the expectations I have of myself. And that can often be the most painful type of expectation hangover.
Christine Hassler is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Expectation Hangover, Overcoming Disappointment in Work, Love, and Life. I should point out it's an exercise book as well with some things to do for the people who read it. Here's Julie in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Christine Hassler.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Christine, I really, really appreciate that you've written this book. I think it really simplifies so that people can actually make a difference in their life and get to the level they need to get to, we need to get to make those changes more lasting. Anyway, I just wondered if you've ever heard of a man named Michael Rice. And it's spelled with a Y, R-Y-C-E. He actually has a website called whyagain.org, and he wrote a book called Why Is This Happening to Me Again?
Huh. And I haven't heard of him, but that sounds like a book I definitely want to check out.
Yeah, it's all free. You know, you can get it online for free. It's all free. He's amazing. He's been doing this work for, I don't know, I can't even, 40 years?
Huh. Wow.
Childhood almost.
All
so,
right.
I think you might like it.
All right. Thanks, Julie. Appreciate that. Uh-huh. Which raises the question, Christine. I mean, you're looking for a niche to hit here. There are people who've done lots of stuff like this, or similar anyway, in terms of like making sure that you don't make your life bad by expecting too much out of it.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing, and here's where this book is different. And again, I write books that I really needed, you know, because I couldn't find the treatment plans out there. And what this book does is it really teaches you how to heal and leverage things emotionally, mentally, behaviorally, and spiritually. Because what I found is out there is we'll address one level. Like you'll learn how to change your thoughts about things, or you'll learn kind of the spiritual reason for things, why things are happening, or how to take action. But I didn't find a really comprehensive guidebook for how to deal with every level. And as humans, we have emotions, we have thoughts, we have behaviors in a physical body, and we have, you know, a spiritual connection. Whether you believe in a higher power or not, we all have sort of a connection to something bigger. Call it universe, call it nature, call it whatever you want. And so that's what I felt really called to do, is really create this guidebook that encompasses all of that. And I have to say, you know, I know it worked because it's worked on me. I told you the story of my 20s. In my 30s, there were other expectation hangovers, like a divorce. And I was able to move through that with so much grace and so much less suffering using the tools that I write about in the book.
Interesting you use the term grace, because I was almost expecting you to say the word ease. Obviously, those are not easy situations, and you did not
right.
make that claim, but at least you knew a little better about how to deal with life and yourself in those situations.
Exactly, and I knew how to leverage it. You know, when I was going through my divorce, I remember one of my teachers said to me, he said, "Christine, milk this for all it's worth." And I knew that was really good advice, because I knew that the divorce was triggering not just that, but all kinds of probably juicy, unresolved stuff I hadn't really dealt with. And if I could really look at what the divorce was about beyond just the ending of a marriage, and what I was learning from it, and what it represented, and what I could step into, and what patterns I was breaking, and how I could go through something like this without judging it as a failure, oh my gosh, there were so many opportunities. And I think when people are in an expectation hangover, they miss a lot of those growth opportunities because they just want to end the suffering. They just want to get through it, you know. And so I really wanted to give people a way to milk their expectation for all it's worth, not to perpetuate the suffering, but to really learn how to leverage it.
Well, let's take another call here. We have Jamie in Medford on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Christine Hassler. Her book is Expectation Hangover.
Well, good morning, Jeffrey. Good morning, Christine.
Hi.
Good morning.
I have a comment and a question regarding your book.
Mm-hmm.
The comment is this. I think that the six worst words in the world that have been perpetuated forever and ever, it seems, is "and they lived happily ever after."
Oh, yes.
And anyway, my question is Christine, well, let me speak about myself for a little bit. I'm a nice guy, to the point that I feel that I'm a doormat, and sometimes I just take it in and take it in until it explodes. And I was just going to say, towards your book, do you have anything in about that could be like a kind of a flowchart or a solution
yes.
to the passive aggressive behavior and how to get out of that? And Jeffrey, I'll take her answer off the phone if I could.
All right, thanks, Jamie. Appreciate it. So, Christine, any ideas there?
Well, yes, in the book, on the behavioral level, you learn what your compensatory strategy is. I shared mine as overachieving. So I would reckon that I spent a lot of time in Australia, so often I use the word reckon. I would reckon that it was Jeffrey, right?
Jeffrey. He's Jamie.
He's Jamie. Sorry, too many J's. With Jamie, that he decided at a very young age that being a nice guy was how he got love and acceptance and approval. How he stayed safe, how he got his worthiness. And he probably got validated for that. Oh, you're so nice. Oh, you're so nice. So part of him thinks that he has to be a nice guy in order to not upset other people, in order to please, in order to get that love, acceptance, validation. And so it's kind of how he compensates. But underneath, he wants to be authentic. He wants to be self-expressed. He wants to be honest. He doesn't want to be the doormat all the time. You know, he wants people to do things for him. But because this has been a compensatory strategy for so long, it's a habit. So in the book, you really learn what your compensatory strategy is. There's exercises for how to process it. And then I teach you how to move into what I call your superpowers, which are those qualities that make you uniquely you. And I would bet in Jamie's case that he's highly creative, that he's very perceptive, that he's very loving and compassionate, which is different than being a pushover and a doormat. So how does he really move into one of his superpowers of authenticity so that he can stop compensating by being a nice guy to everybody?
Well, so then you're logically, then, if you change out of your compensatory strategy, you're going to shock a few people who've known
yep.
you for a long time, because they're going to go,
yep.
hey, wait, what's with you?
Exactly. And what we can't live our life for other people. You know, in order to really step into the truth of who we are, we have to be okay with other people not being okay with it. Now, that doesn't mean that we're a jerk to people in our life. It means that we can still be loving and still be honest. But again, like, we have to be willing for other people not to be, you know, okay with some of our choices. You know, I've learned this in my own life when I've had to set boundaries with people in my life who I love so much, even family members. But I wasn't having an authentic relationship because I was doing things that were keeping them happy. But internally, I was breeding resentment because I wasn't living in the truth. So I think in our relationships, it's important to be loving, but part of being loving is being really honest. And sometimes boundaries are necessary in that. And sometimes, you know, we upset other people, and it's not our responsibility to make sure everybody else in our life is happy.
I should point out to listeners, the book is divided into three sections: expectations, treatment plan, and prevention. We've been spending a lot of time on expectations, and I want to ask in particular about Chapter 4, Awareness and Acceptance, because it almost sounds like working through grief stages to come to grips with the things that have led to your expectation hangover.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the first thing is really... So there's a woman named Byron Katie, and she has a process called The Work, and I really love and respect her work so much. And one of her quotes, and I don't know if I'm quoting it exactly, but it's something like, when you argue with reality, you only lose 100% of the time. And that's so true. And the biggest thing that kind of keeps us stuck is that something happens that we don't like, and we fight with it. We're like, this shouldn't be happening. I don't like this. You know, maybe we're not screaming at it, but it's hard for us to accept our reality a lot of the times. So the first really step is, okay, let's use the example of I just lost my job. All right, I just lost my job. This is not my preference. This is not what I want, but I'm willing to accept it right now so I can learn and heal.
All right, we'll pick it up there on the other side of the break. Expectation Hangover is the book, Overcoming Disappointment in Work, Love, and Life. Christine Hassler is the author and our guest. We'll be back with her and take more of your phone calls and emails on The Exchange in a minute five. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Our guest today is Christine Hassler, former Hollywood agent turned personal trainer turned coach, speaker, life coach, I should say, speaker and retreat facilitator and author three times over. Her latest book is Expectation Hangover, Overcoming Disappointment in Work, Love, and Life, getting our expectations to match our lives a little better for our own personal satisfaction. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange with questions or comments at 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760, or by email jx@jeffnet.org. We were talking about awareness and acceptance, but just coming to grips with things like losing a job and realizing that even if it doesn't make any particular sense to us, there is still something in that for us to shove ourselves forward in a sense.
Exactly, exactly. And again, if you can begin by asking, what am I learning versus why is this happening? You're gonna move through it a lot more differently. The more you stay in the why and perpetuate any kind of victim thinking, the more you're gonna suffer. So I have compassion for anyone going through disappointment, anyone going through an expectation hangover, losing a job and going, oh my gosh, how am I gonna feed my family? But when we go into that place of panic and fear, we lose a connection to our inner guidance and our inner resources. It's hard to be our best self and to think creatively and to engage in the most effective problem solving part of our brain when we're in fear and panic.
Which, as you point out in part two, the treatment plan. I mean, you say you have emotions, but you are not your emotions, so you can separate this.
Exactly. So if I'm a human, right? So if I lose my job or I get dumped, it's natural for me to feel sad. So I teach you in the book how to have your feelings with compassion, how to process them in a way where you release them rather than recycle them or identify with them. The thing with our feelings is we either suppress them, numb them, avoid them, or we over-identify with them and indulge in them. And there's a way to learn how to let them go and get through them so that we can move kind of to the next level of treatments, which is working on the mental level and then changing our behavior and then really kind of moving to the spiritual level in terms of getting the soul lessons for why this particular thing is happening.
All right. Help us out here to understand something that on the surface appears at least close to contradictory. You talk about we seek control in our lives, and control is one of the things that leads to expectation hangovers. And yet later in the book, you say we do know what is best for us.
Mm-hmm.
There's some element to maintaining control in that part, isn't there? Insisting upon what is best for us?
Well, there's a difference between controlling something and really following our intuition and our inner guidance. And really what control is trying to manipulate external circumstances. Knowing what's best for us and following our inner guidance is really about knowing that we only have dominion over our inner experience, our thoughts, our choices, or behavior. So we may know that, you know, okay, so let's use a relationship example. Let's say internally we really feel like this other person is who we're supposed to be with and we follow that guidance. well, we can't control whether or not that other person is going to want to be with us. They may have their own issues, their own resistance, their own fears, whatever it may be. So it's like, yes, trusting our intuition, but we have to surrender some of the outcomes. We can't manipulate and control every situation that's in our life.
All right. We have another question here from Nancy in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Christine Hassler. Her book is Expectation Hangover.
Is it me?
Yes, it is.
Oh, yeah. I was just commenting to myself about what you just talked about, other people and how they deal with your feelings. I'm on my morning walk, so
okay.
Bear with me here. I found in grief, which I've been in for several months because I unexpectedly and suddenly lost my husband. And what I found is that I know I have to have my feelings and process them, even if it's a physical process, to get them out. But what I'm amazed at is the lack of understanding, or else they just don't want me to have the feelings that I'm having.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, interesting. So sorry to hear about your loss, Nancy, really, and thanks for sharing that with us, and thanks for taking us along on your walk today. Christine, this gets to something we have, because we talk about the way people feel about things and emotions, but we also talk about death a fair amount on the exchange from time to time. We're very uncomfortable with that. I mean, is it more about people don't want you to have feelings, or they're just so squeamish about other people's strong emotions, particularly when they involve things like death?
The latter. People are very uncomfortable with emotions. Most of us don't know how to really move into the energy of compassion, which is really just being with someone suffering. Since people are uncomfortable with their own feelings, they're uncomfortable when they see someone else having feelings. And what we need, really, when we're having a big feeling is just for someone to hold a loving space for us and just be like, it's okay, like, I'm here, let it out. But what happens is people tend to try to fix or pep talk each other out of it because they're uncomfortable. You know, and I'm totally comfortable with other people yelling, crying, screaming, whatever in front of me because I've gotten comfortable with my own feelings. And I think, you know, it's so hard for us to see another person suffering, especially someone that we love, but we have to give each other the dignity of our own processes, you know. And if you've lost someone or someone that you love has lost someone or they're in grief, the biggest gift you can give yourself is your own compassion for your feelings. And the biggest gift you can give someone else is really just holding the space for them when they go through what they go through. I don't think there's, you know, when we try to prescribe a timeline or a formula to grief, I think that's really unfair. You know, everybody has their own process and journey through it.
Well, and people need to remember, too, that when people are expressing strong emotions near them, it doesn't mean strong emotions directed at them. And I think
correct.
This is where a lot of people get tied up. It's like, oh, my God, they were so angry. Well, they weren't angry with you.
Right, exactly. It's like, can you let someone, you know, feel their emotions and process and yell or whatever they need to do because that's part of their process and, like, not internalize it at all.
Well, I was going to ask you, too, about the many stories of individuals I'm sure you've heard over the years of talking about this, and if there have been some real oh my God moments as you hear people's stories and things that gave them expectation hangovers.
Oh my gosh, yes. I mean, everything from death. You know, there's a story in there from a woman who lost her husband when they were 28 years old, you know, and just starting their life together. Stories of another woman whose daughter was in a horrific car accident, and this woman had this amazing career and all this stuff, and she completely left it to be with her daughter. And stories of people who got diagnosed with cancer and thought their life was going to be over and ended up starting a nonprofit to help other people go through the process. And the trend that I've noticed in working with people is when they really treat and leverage their disappointment, they're called to serve in some way afterwards, you know, not necessarily in a career, but, you know, the word passion actually means suffering. And I think over time we've evolved it to mean things that we love. And same thing with our personal journey. So often the things we suffer through, once we get to the other side of it, we're called to share and to serve in that way.
I'm curious about which part of life, in your experience, seems to be the greatest generator of expectation hangovers. Because as I look at the subtitle, Disappointment in Work, Love, and Life, I wonder if it would have been pretty easy to put love first.
Yes, I think that that's definitely one of the areas where they are very, 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 very common. And I think work, too. I think that there's a lot more expectation on career than there has been in previous generations. I think previous generations, it was, you know, you go and you get a job and you pay the bills. And now we have this expectation that work is supposed to be the be-all and end-all of our experience. And if we're not doing something that we're jumping for joy at every day, then we have an expectation hangover. We think we're doing something wrong. And also in the love department, I think that there is even more of an expectation that there's this like one soulmate out there that we're going to live happily ever after with. And we project a lot of expectation in that as well. And in relationships in particular, I think why they're so hard sometimes in terms of the hangovers is that, you know, relationships are mirrors. And there's nothing as activating and as triggering as a relationship, especially a romantic relationship, to really hold a mirror in front of us and show us some of our unresolved issues and some of the areas where we need to grow.
So I point that out. There is a workbook set of things in here as well. I mean, in the sense that you provide exercises for people. And there is an exercise on exploring emotions. What are you trying to get people to do there?
Well, as I was referencing earlier, people don't really like to feel. So in that exercise, you actually really learn how to feel in a way where you're not judging yourself, you're not suppressing, you're not numbing yourself. And again, since we were kids, we were kind of cut off from our feelings. So it's a way to learn how to feel your feelings, release your feelings without identifying them and without recycling them or wallowing in them. Because our feelings are, they're important. Oftentimes they're guidance. And I've gotten to the point now in my life because I've done this work for so long where if I'm feeling off, if I'm feeling sadness or anger or whatever it is, that feeling usually has a message for me. You know, there's usually something in there if I'm willing to go and explore it. There's an insight, there's a healing, there's kind of an aha moment that these feelings can generate. So when you learn how to explore them rather than identify with them, they can become great resources.
And again, the book in three parts, Expectations, Treatment Plan, and Prevention. Within the treatment plan, there's a mention of the surfer frequently. What is that reference about?
So the surfer is actually in the emotional level of the treatment plan only, and it's about how to ride the waves of your emotion. So in the treatment plan on the emotional, mental, behavioral, and spiritual level, I use a tool called Role Playing RX, where I use a familiar role. Everybody's familiar with the role of surfing, even if you're not a surfer, but you're aware of what one does to kind of help you have a visual and mental aid for how to do these things on each level that I'm teaching you to do. And so if you think of a surfer, when a surfer goes out, they catch a wave and they ride it and they let the wave take them and they don't like try to control it. They don't get off before it's over. They ride it all the way through to the beach. And that's what we have to learn how to do with our emotions. We have to learn to surf them, to like ride the wave of whatever we're feeling all the way to the end. And I use the metaphor of a temper tantrum with a child. If you've ever seen a child have a temper tantrum, the truth is if you don't interrupt them, if you just let them go through the waves of their emotion, eventually they'll come out of it. You know, first they yell and scream, and then they kind of go to crying, then they go to sobbing, then that's kind of that light, like, whimper, you know, where they're kind of breathing heavy and kind of going like that. And then they start rocking themselves, you know, nurturing themselves, and then they want ice cream. And they just rode the wave through if they're not interrupted, and they're fine. And it doesn't get suppressed inside. And so, you know, this is funny, but in the book I teach you how to have an adult version of a temper tantrum in a healing, therapeutic, not at someone else kind of way.
So do you tend to do this by yourself, or can you do it with another person in the room, or how?
You can do it with another person in the room if you want someone to hold space for you, but I have found it incredibly valuable to do on my own because part of our journey is we have to become our own best parents, and we have to find that compassion within ourselves, and we have to learn that we can go and explore our emotions and not get lost in them. So if you need to start this work with someone else, with a coach or a therapist, that's great. And, you know, eventually you want to get to the point where you know that you're not going to get lost in the abyss of your feelings. You know, I know for me, I was diagnosed with clinical depression when I was 10 and medicated from 10 until 30. And I knew when I was hitting my late 20s, 30s, that I wanted to get off the medication. And this is just my experience. I'm not here to say medication is wrong.
Okay.
But part of the reason that I was so afraid to get off of it and why I couldn't, despite all my attempts, was because I was afraid to go to the depths of the feelings that the medication prevented me from hitting. And once I had the tools and the resources to be able to go to those feelings and actually get through them, I was able to get to the other side. And for me personally, doing a lot of work on this, I mean, I've been off antidepressants for years now, so it was something I was able to kind of step out of. But a big part of that was being willing to go to the dark places that I was scared to go to.
Okay, there's an exercise in here in future forecasting, and and I'm curious on how that squares up with the point about not setting expectations to points where you will get disappointed, will get an expectation hangover.
Well, here's the thing. The future forecasting is less about outcome and less about form and more about essence. So in the exercise of future forecasting, I'm asking you to describe what you kind of want to be experiencing, how you want to be feeling. I'm not saying you're writing things like, I am working for Google and making, you know, this amount of money. It's more, I am in a job where I feel supported and I feel creative and inspired, like those kinds of things. And so how the law of attraction really works is about essence, not form. It's about feeling. It's about experience. And so we want to, as we're thinking about the future, we want to visualize things that are uplifting, because if we don't, we go into things like worry and fear and anxiety. So it's visualizing those things. It's holding the experience you'd like to create, but holding it loosely, not being attached to the outcome, you know, and really being open to the possibility that something even better could come along. But it's impossible, I think, to not ever drift to the future. But if you're going to go to the future, at least make it something good.
Well, you have learned a lot, and it's great that you shared it with us in the book Expectation Hangover. Christine Hassler, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson
Exchange. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.